Of Kings. So now let the tittle-tattle begin as Squire Allworthy makes a startling discovery.
Tom Jones by Henry Fielding, dramatised by Stephen Wyatt. Part 1.
This is the history of Tom Jones, a foundling. So it seems only right and proper to start by describing how he was found. In that part of the western division of this kingdom, which is commonly called Somersetshire, lived a gentleman and widower called Allworthy. But he'd been absent a full quarter of a year in London on some very particular business, although sadly I can't tell you what it was.
Bridget!
He was greeted by his sister, Bridget, who, for all her admirable qualities, remained unmarried. They had a brief supper, and then Squire Allworthy retired, much fatigued, to his bedroom. As always, he first of all knelt in prayer.
Which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come.
But as he did so, he became aware of a strange noise.
Oh, no, it cannot be. It cannot be.
But it was. There, lying in his bed, was an infant wrapped up in some coarse linen. He rang for help. An elderly servant woman came running. But the sight of Squire Allworthy wearing nothing but his nightshirt was too much for her. In the end, his sister Bridget came to see what the matter was.
What are you going to do, brother? If the story comes out, there'll be a great deal of tittle-tattle. They'll gossip behind your back and say you are the father. Best to put the baby on the parish.
Lord, he's gripping my finger in his tiny hand. He's imploring my assistance.
Is he?
Oh, yes.
Well, at least try and find out who the mother is.
So, you do not deny you are the mother of this child?
No, sir.
Oh, Jenny Jones, you are an intelligent girl. You know that it is in my power to punish you very rigorously for what you've done.
Yes, sir.
Now, as for the child, let no thoughts concerning it molest you. I will provide for it in a better manner than you can ever hope. I intend to adopt him.
Oh, thank you.
So, all that remains is for you to tell me who the father is.
Please don't ask.
Hmm?
I give my word. But thank you for the care you offer to my son. With your permission, I'll be gone from here soon. The village bitches are not going to gnaw at my flesh.
The next that was heard of Jenny was that she'd gone off with a recruiting officer. Still, the village found out the father anyway. It was, they believed, one Partridge, an inoffensive married man who worked as both schoolmaster and barber. He'd been giving Jenny Jones private coaching, and everyone knew what that meant. Or thought they did.
So, are you the father of this child?
No, your worship. I swear before God. Well,
this denial will look ill for you, Partridge, in the face of the testimony against you. You realise I cannot continue to pay for you to teach the village children.
That's as good as asking me to leave.
Well, I'm sorry. For both you and your wife.
Oh. She won't come with me.
Hmm?
Praise the Lord.
So the putative parents of the foundling left the village, and Squire Allworthy made the boy his own. He christened him Tom Jones. Well, his mother was a Jones, and the name had a fine, manly English ring. Then suddenly, Miss Bridget Allworthy found herself a husband, one Captain Blifil. Cynics may suggest that Miss Bridget's fortune was an inducement to the handsome captain to propose to a woman of inestimable virtue, but modest looks and years beyond his own. But if the captain looked to a wealthy future, he had an unpleasant surprise. Because he died first. He was not much lamented by his long-suffering wife, who consoled herself with frequent trips to town, but at least she gave him a very handsome tombstone. Maybe because he had given her a son. So Squire Allworthy acquired a nephew not much younger than his adopted son. And here ends the prologue. Now, in this narrative, we do not sit around. If nothing important happens, then we swiftly move on. And so a period of some 18 years has elapsed, and the story of Tom Jones begins.
There they are. A whole covey of them. Time to spring them, Master Tom.
Now, be warned. For want of a better, Tom Jones is our hero, but don't expect him to be a model of virtue. He has his faults, and one of his delights is to sneak off secretly and go shooting with Black George, Squire Allworthy's gamekeeper. A poacher turned gamekeeper, who on occasion could always be persuaded to turn poacher again.
There! One down!
Yes, but look.
What of it?
That's Squire Weston's land is fallen off.
It's only a few yards.
You know the master says never to trespass there.
It's but a few yards. What's the harm?
I could lose my job.
Nobody'll see us. And look! There's another! Come on! What is there to fear?
Damn me, it's too good to waste. Let's go.
That's Squire Weston. He must have heard the shots. George. George?
But when Tom looks round, the more experienced George has disappeared into the thickest part of the furze brake.
Damn you, you thieving, poaching rogues! I'll have your giblets for garters! Well, well, Master Jones. Did you hear those shots just now?
I may have done.
Hux on it! What's that you've got there?
What, sir?
Don't take me for a half-wit. That's a dead partridge, two dead partridges, in fact, on my land. Damn me, boy, Mr. Allworthy shall hear this.
Come, Tom, the truth.
The birds originally broke cover on your manor,
sir. That's no excuse for your trespass. And who was with you at the time?
Nobody, sir.
Squire Weston heard two guns. And I know you sometimes hunt with Black George. He denies it all, of course.
I was alone, sir. Ah. I truly was.
Tom, I detest falsehood. Maybe the Reverend Mr. Thwackum will change your mind.
Sir, Mr. Thwackum won't change anything. He still yearns for the times when he could beat me within an inch of my life.
Oh, Tom. Still the same wild boy.
I don't mean to upset you.
Tom, I know. But you do.
Jones has persisted in an untruth, Mr. Allworthy. He is clearly guilty as charged and should be punished for his sins, preferably corporally.
Or maybe he has lied, but he only did it from a mistaken point of honour, Mr. Thwackum.
Honour? Mere stubbornness and obstinacy. If only you'd let me beat the truth out of him.
Mr. Thwackum, your meditations are always full of birch, because you believe mankind is irretrievably evil.
Without redemption, by God's grace.
What a pity that you have never properly listened to what I have to say.
I have heard more of your ideas than human blood can stand, Mr. Squire.
You always drag religion into it, whereas I believe that human nature is the perfection of all virtue and that vice is a deviation from our nature in the same manner as deformity of body is.
Mankind is naturally evil.
Mankind is naturally good.
Although this argument rages over profound issues about the very nature of human existence, you would probably prefer to learn that Mr. Allworthy maintains two tutors for Tom and young Blifil. Mr. Square is a philosopher who has no time for organized religion. Mr. Thwackum is a divine with no time for innate human virtue. Mr. Allworthy fondly believes the two lads will therefore receive a balanced education. But sometimes that belief is sorely tested.
No, let us take honour. If by honour we mean the true natural beauty of virtue, then that exists independently of any religion whatsoever.
Oh, yes, so any heretic or infidel may think what they will.
I am talking, sir.
And so am I.
And I am going to bed.
And there the matter might have rested, were it not for a character you have yet to meet, Master Blifil. His mother is hardly ever around. Maybe that is the explanation for his particular breed of piety and self-interest.
Well, Thomas, you've saved your precious George from the dismissal he well deserved.
I don't want to talk about it.
You have burdened yourself with an unnecessary lie when you know the truth is always to be preferred. But then I suppose you're condemned by your parentage to relish the company of lowlife like George Seagram.
What do you mean?
Well, there's a natural propensity in you towards the low and dishonest, for which I profoundly pity you from my heart. It must rankle.
What must? What must?
Why, being a beggarly bastard.
Oh! I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. But you shouldn't have said that.
The sensitive should be assured that the sounds you hear do not indicate anything more serious than a bloody nose.
Well, of course I forgive him. He couldn't help it.
Yes, but what was the cause?
No, I'd rather not say, Uncle, but...
But?
Well, I value Tom's moral well-being as you do yourself, and I am concerned that he's being led astray by bad company. I told him that I prayed nightly that he would not fall into untruth.
And?
He said it was no business of mine if he'd lied to you about Black George being with him that day.
He said what?
Oh, dear. Oh, what have I said? I never meant to let his secret slip.
Well, whether you meant it or not, the truth is out now.
But Allworthy decides Tom has been punished enough. He reserves his severity for the gamekeeper.
You let Tom take all the obloquy on your behalf. There is a great difference between telling a falsehood to excuse yourself and telling a falsehood to excuse another.
I'll put my job at risk.
George, this is not the first complaint I've had against you. Take your wages and go.
George, I'm sorry.
Too late for that.
I spoke to Mr. Allworthy. I did my best, but it was no use. Here. Well, I know it's not much.
I've lost my job. Is this all you can offer?
It's all I have. I'll find you more. Somehow. Yeah, I promise.
You do that, Master Tom. And be quick about it.
Mr. Thwackum?
What is it?
I was perusing my Bible, and there are certain texts concerning charity towards one's neighbours, upon which I would value your learning.
Is that a new Bible you have there?
I cannot say.
I thought so. This is Tom Jones's Bible, a gift from Mr. Allworthy. How come it is in your hands?
I had not meant to tell you, but since you ask, I cannot lie. Tom sold this Bible, along with the little horse my uncle gave him, which he claimed he loved so dearly. I was able to redeem them both. Would I could do the same with Tom himself.
I must tell Mr. Allworthy about this.
Must you?
Tom, why do you try my trust in you at every turn?
I didn't want to sell these things, sir. They are gifts from you.
So why did you sell them? If you needed money, why not tell me?
I can't say.
Oh. Mr. Thwackum says...
Beat me?
Yes. And Mr. Squares says...
Find my inner goodness?
Yes.
So what will you do?
Hope. What else can I do?
I have now to prepare you for a disturbing revelation. Mr. Jones's interest in Black George and the Seagrim family is not entirely charitable. You may be shocked to hear that a handsome, healthy young man of 18 has certain appetites, and that Black George has a daughter called Molly, who is esteemed one of the handsomest girls in the whole county, and one of the most forward.
Mr. Jones!
Molly!
You're breathless.
I am bringing some more money for your father.
He'd only waste it. Other members of the family are far more deserving, in my opinion.
You're looking well, Molly.
Am I?
Very well.
So do you really have to hurry on?
Yes. No.
You should be warned that during this narrative, scenes of a sexual nature may occur, but please be assured that their precise detail will always be left discreetly to your imagination. Our sounds will never, as it were, thrust these matters in your face. Enough. for this is far from the first encounter between Tom and the luscious Molly, and we are about to introduce our heroine, Miss Sophia Weston. Sophia is lovely and intelligent, her hair luxuriant, her figure perfectly proportioned, her... But perhaps I should leave you to create your own imagined portrait of Miss Weston. She has recently returned home after 3 years away under the care of her aunt, acquiring both breeding and learning. Her father is fonder of her than of any other human being, though it is a close-run thing with his favourite horse.
It's a long time since we've seen each other.
Yes. And you? You've changed. For the better, I mean.
Do you remember the bird you brought me?
What makes you think of that?
You took it from the nest, nursed it up and taught it to sing. Oh, I love that bird. Little Tommy, I called it. I always kept a string around its leg so it wouldn't fly away.
And then you had to let Blifil hold the string.
And then he let it go, and it flew away. And you chased it all the way down here to the stream. You climbed on that tree where it had perched, but as you reached out, the branch snapped and... splash! You were my hero.
I didn't get your bird back.
Well, Blifil said a hawk got it. But he would, wouldn't he?
He said, I felt a poor creature languished for liberty, and I own I could not forbear giving it what it desired.
But it was you who got the beating, for getting your clothes wet. It was so long ago.
Sophia, I've a mighty favour to ask.
Go on.
Well, it's just that George Seagram, has been sacked by Mr. Allworthy, because your father...
Yes, I heard. You want me to put in a word with my father about giving him a job. Is this the mighty favour?
Thank you, Sophie.
No, I pity the poor fellow. And I've already sent some clothing and money to his family. He has a daughter, doesn't he? Molly, is it?
Yes, but...
Well, I have my own maid, Honour. But maybe I can persuade Father to take her into service. What do you think?
I think... You are wonderful!
He snatches her hand and eagerly kisses it. It's the first time his lips have ever touched her. The effect upon Sophia is startling, but Tom is a little aghast as to where his enthusiasm has taken him. He is, after all, committed elsewhere.
Father? Tom came to see me today.
The lad has his faults and keeps bad company, but I can't help but admire him. There's not a man in the county who can leap over a five-barred gate like he can. Or hunt a pack of hounds if he'd only keep his nose clean. My guns, dogs and horses would be at his command.
Then perhaps, Father, I can ask you...
Play me, said Georgie was for England again. And you can ask me anything. Just spare me your damned modern handle nonsense.
The squire easily grants his daughter's request to offer employ to both George and his daughter, and so everything might have ended here, were it not for one problem. One increasingly evident problem.
Molly, you can't.
Why not?
Not Miss Weston's dress she sent.
What's wrong with the dress?
Well, it's not the dress, it's you. There's no mistaking it now. The bump's plain for all to see.
Well, what if it is? There's no reason why I can't make myself handsome and go to church, is there?
Molly, I'm warning you.
Warn away, Mother.
Molly Seagrim goes off to church. But afterwards, in the graveyard, her reception from the other women is hostile.
Slut.
And there's a fight.
What you say? I said slut.
Luckily, Tom gets wind of what is happening.
Molly! Molly!
And like a true knight-errant rallies to his lady's defence.
Molly!
Oh, Rose! Come here now!
Molly!
Quite enough gratuitous violence for now, I think. Tom rescues the bloody but unbowed Molly at the cost of a number of scratches and bruises to his own person and takes her home. But the truth, nevertheless, is out.
The wench was brought before Squire Allworthy this morning, but she refuses to name the father. Without doubt, he'll have to send her to Bridewell, even though the world knows that Allworthy's as arrant a whoremaster as any within 5 miles of here. Does not the whole county know St. Thomas? Like father, like son in this case. Hey, Sophie?
Father, if you'll excuse me.
First, sit down, girl. You have not the worst opinion of a young fellow for getting a bastard, have you?
Please, I don't want to.
No. The wench is like a man, the better for it.
If you say so, sir.
Not that Molly Seagrim hasn't, well, a reputation, but there's no doubt Tom's the father, eh, Sophia?
I'm sorry, Father, but I do have a headache.
Stop bobbing up and down, girl. What's the matter with you? The parson tells me there was a battle royal between Molly Seagrim and some village women in the churchyard. Soons. I'd like to have seen that.
Come in.
Sir, I have to see you.
Tom?
I've just got back and I find the constable ready to take Molly Seagrim to prison.
Those were my instructions to him, yes.
Isn't that harsh?
The wench is without shame and refuses to reveal the father.
Sir, I am the father.
You are responsible. You have corrupted and ruined the poor girl.
Yes, I confess I have corrupted her, but whether she shall be ruined depends on you. For heaven's sake, sir, revoke your warrant. Let her go home to her parents and not be exposed to a greater degree of shame and scorn than must necessarily fall on her.
Very well.
Oh, thank you, sir.
The fault is yours.
Indeed, sir. But if you have the goodness to forgive me, I hope I shall deserve it.
I hope so too.
The good squire reads Tom a very severe lecture upon sexual immorality. It is a well-rehearsed lecture, for he has given it over his years as magistrate to many men and women. But in a triumph of faith over experience, he still believes it might have some effect.
Well, Miss Sophia, she seemed to me like a confident slut, and she laid the child to Mr. Jones. To be sure, you can't help pitying the poor young man, and yet he doesn't deserve much pity either for demeaning himself with such kind of trumpery. Still, I dare swear the wench was as willing as he. She was always a forward kind of body. Nobody can deny that Mr. Jones is one of the handsomest men that ever...
Please, Honour, enough. What does it matter to me what Mr. Jones does?
To be sure, ma'am, I never thought it was any harm to say a young man was handsome. Still, handsome is as handsome does.
And stop your torrent of impertinence and see whether my father wants me at breakfast.
Very good, ma'am. I'm sorry if I've upset you in some way.
Upset me? Don't be ridiculous.
Very good, ma'am.
Squire Weston, of course, thinks none the worse of Master Jones for being a whoremaster. And so at his invitation, Tom continues to hunt whenever the hounds meet.
Miss Weston!
Mr. Jones!
I did not know you had a love of the chase.
I don't, but it pleases my father. I hope also in some measure to restrain his impetuosity. He so frequently exposes his neck to the utmost hazard.
I fear that's part of the pleasure for him. Oh, that's a mettlesome mount you have there.
I'm sure I will manage.
The sensitive among you may be distressed to learn that the principal figures in our tale enjoy the hunt. And sadly, there is no evidence to suggest that any of them ever consider the feelings of the fox. During the chase, Miss Weston's mount begins to suddenly prance and caper in such a manner that she is in the most imminent peril of falling. Tom, who is a little distance behind, sees this and immediately gallops to her assistance.
Miss Weston! Miss Weston!
He leaps from his horse and catches hers by the bridle. The unruly beast rears up on its hind legs and throws its lovely burden from its back. But Jones, for once the perfect hero, catches Sophia in his arms and breaks her fall.
I trust you have received no hurt.
None, thanks to you.
If I have preserved you, then I am sufficiently repaid for the small misfortune I have suffered on this occasion.
Misfortune? What misfortune?
Oh, be not concerned, madam. If I have broke my arm, I consider it but a trifle.
Broke your arm? Heaven forbid!
Oh, don't worry, madam. It's only my left arm. I still have a right hand yet at your service to...
Mr. Jones!
Tom is carried back to the squire's house and put to bed till the surgeon is summoned. His guardian is among the first of his visitors.
Well, Tom, I'm sorry for your sufferings and proud of your gallant behaviour, but being confined to bed will, I hope, give you time to reflect. I want you to promise me one thing, on pain of my severe disapproval. You will not have any further contact with Molly Seagram.
But I...
You promise?
Yes.
Damn me, Tom, that broken bone of judgment upon thee. Pox and Parson Thwackum for saying it. Did you not come by it in defence of a young woman? And if you never do anything worse, you will go to heaven sooner than all the parsons in the country. Isn't that right, Sophie?
Mr. Jones knows how grateful I am to him.
But don't be mean of your praise, Sophie. Damn me, my boy. There's nothing that's in my power that I won't do for you. You shall take thy choice of all the horses in my stable tomorrow morning. Except only the Chevalier. Oh, and Miss Slouch.
No, sir, I couldn't accept such...
Then why not have the sorrel mare that Sophie was riding? She cost me 50 guineas. Comes 6 years old, this grass.
If she had cost me 1,000, I would have given her to the dogs.
Pooh! Just because she broke thy arm? You should forget and forgive. I thought you'd be more of a man than to bear malice against a dumb creature. Sophie, why have you stopped playing?
I'm sorry, Father.
Sophia's behaviour gives Tom a restless night. He has never before considered that she might have strong feelings towards him. And yet he knows that Squire Weston, for all his regard for Tom, would never contemplate marriage for Sophia with any but a man of property.
Tom, my handsome Tom.
And then a vision of the lovely Molly intrudes itself. The nature of the ensuing dream is perhaps best left to your imaginations. But despite his promise to Mr. Allworthy, he feels he can't abandon her. So, as dawn breaks...
No. No. I must abide by Molly and think no more of Sophia. Oh.
Why, Mr. Jones!
Is Molly in?
Yes. No. Yes. Molly! Molly! Here's Mr. Jones to see you. Come in.
Where is she?
Oh, she's in her bedchamber. She's not been feeling well.
So, where do I?
Up the ladder. Molly! Mr. Jones is coming up to see you.
Tom!
Molly, my love, how are you?
Well, this is a surprise. I thought now you were living in luxury at Squire Weston's, you'd forgotten all about your poor abandoned Molly.
Oh, I thought about you a lot. But Mr. Allworthy forbade me to come and see you. Please believe I will do everything I can to provide for you. But if you could one day find a man who might marry you and make you happy, then...
So this is your love for me, is it? To forsake me now that you've ruined me? How often, when I told you that men tire of us when they've had their wicked ways with us, did you swear you would never forsake me?
Oh, Molly...
Why mention another man? I can never love any other man as long as I live. All other men are as nothing to me. I will live...
What was that?
What was what?
That.
I don't hear anything.
It's coming from over there.
Where?
Behind that old rug. Let's take a look.
No.
But Tom pulls down the old rug, and there, with nothing covering his nakedness, apart from an old nightcap of Molly's, is...
Mr. Squire! I grant that at first the circumstances look unfavourable. But philosophy allows us to look at them in a different light. I am not Molly's first lover.
You are not her first lover. Her impregnation can probably be laid at the door of a lusty yokel called Tom Barnes, so neither of us is at fault. And in any case, what can be more innocent than the indulgence of a natural appetite?
Bastard!
Oh!
That'll teach you to talk impregnation.
Oh! Oh!
What's so funny?
Everything! Thank you, Molly.
Where are you going?
Thank you.
Come back.
But Tom suddenly feels he is free. Free to do what he wants. Free to say what he wants. And then, as if in a dream, he sees Sophia come running towards him.
Oh, Tom, there you are.
Sophia, what's the matter?
You must return home at once. Mr. Allworthy is seriously ill. Apparently it started as a cold and turned to a fever, and now there are grounds for thinking him close to death.
Is everyone here?
Yes.
Has Tom returned?
Yes, sir.
Everyone's here except my mother, sir. There's no word from her.
Alas, I cannot wait.
Oh, Uncle, how we shall miss you.
No, please do not sorrow, my dear nephew. Death is unavoidable, and if my time has come, then I have no cause for complaint, as mine has been a fortunate life. But I wish to speak concerning my will.
Oh, pray, Uncle, do not speak of such matters.
No, nephew Blifil, I want you to know that I leave you the heir to my whole estate.
I am not worthy.
Accepting only £500 a year.
But, Uncle, surely...
Which I give to you, Tom.
Thank you, sir. My friend. My father.
Now, Thomas, don't press in on my uncle, sir.
Let him come. Perhaps you think I've given you too little, Tom, and the world will think I've given you too much.
You have always been more generous to me than I deserve, sir.
That's enough, Thomas. Don't cling to Uncle.
And now, the rest of you deserve to know what I have planned for you. Mr. Thwackum, Mr. Square.
Sir.
£1,000. For a distinguished man of God, when that wastrel Jones is to get 500 a year.
And Mr. Allworthy thinks no more of my philosophy than your religion.
Oh.
1,000. That's a miserable amount on which to survive while contemplating the perfection of the human soul.
This calls for more beer.
For once, I agree.
When Mr. Allworthy finally falls asleep, Tom is the last to leave.
Please do not die, my dearest benefactor.
Even when he leaves, the loss is more than he can bear to contemplate. But now, a stranger appears on the scene.
Tell Mr. Blifil, Lawyer Dowling is here to see him.
Yes, sir.
Lawyer Dowling. As your narrator, it is my duty to tell you that you should remember this name, as he will occur in our story again.
I am sorry to be the bearer of sad tidings, Mr. Blifil, particularly at such a difficult time.
At Salisbury, you say?
A gout in her head and stomach carried her off in a few hours. I had barely time to reach her.
Poor mother, she would insist on travelling so much. I fear the shock of her death will quicken my dear uncle's demise. Still, he must be told at once.
There is something else I should mention.
Oh?
The reason your mother urged me to see her was because she had a letter which she wished to be given to your uncle.
A letter?
Yes. For his eyes only.
Let me take it.
You're sure you don't want me to hand it to him?
Perfectly. Poor uncle. I can only pray he will survive the shock of this news, but I must not be weak. No delay.
Goodbye, Mr. Dowling. Goodbye, Mr. Blifil.
Dowling. Lawyer Dowling. Got that one?
Oh.
God bless the doctor. You deserve a statue erected to you at public expense.
Against all Mr. Blifil's expectation of hastening his uncle's death, fate decides otherwise. Mr. Allworthy starts to recover.
Damn you, Doctor. I love you better than my own soul.
I do not wish to be uncharitable, but some members of the household experience a certain disappointment at the news. Tom, however, is delighted and gets drunk in celebration.
Let joy be unconfined, damn it! Laro, laro, lily balaro, lily balaro, balanala.
What is this laro, unseemly row?
Oh, I'm sorry, Blifil. No offence meant.
It has pleased heaven to give us some prospect of my uncle's recovery, but it would be better to express your happiness in thanksgiving than in drunkenness and riots, particularly as this is still a house of mourning on the account of my dear mother.
I'm sorry, I had heard. But my joy for Mr. Allworthy's recovery has driven every other thought out of my mind. Here, my hand.
I suppose I shouldn't be surprised at your insensibility. But then I have the misfortune to know who my parents are and consequently must be affected by their loss.
What are you saying?
You know what I'm saying, beggarly bastard.
Damn you, Blifil.
Let me go! Let me go!
Apologise!
You are talking to a recent orphan...
Yes, that's true. I'm sorry, Blifil. Please accept my apology. I've drunk too much. I must go and clear my head.
Yeah, I think you should.
Pressure, that's the thing.
Mr. Allworthy shall hear of this at the right time.
It is a pleasant evening in the latter end of June, and Tom's thoughts, unsurprisingly, turn to...
Sophia, Sophia. Ah, my lovely Sophia. Curse the fortune which sets a distance between us. But though I will never possess you, I vow that you alone have possession of my thoughts, my love, my soul.
And seeing a tree upon which he might carve her name... He pulls out his penknife.
You don't intend to kill me, Squire, I hope?
Molly! Well, I didn't see you. Why do you think I would kill you?
After your cruel usage of me last time I saw you, killing me would perhaps be too great a kindness for me to expect.
But, Mr. Squire...
What of him?
But I thought...
What did you think?
A discussion ensues, which, as I do not think myself obliged to relate it, I shall omit. It is sufficient that it lasts a full quarter of an hour, and at its regrettable conclusion, they retire into the thickest part of the grove. You could blame it on the drink. You could blame it on any number of things. But the fact is, it happened. And then, because fortune seldom does things by halves...
Mr. Thwackum, do you see what I see?
Yes?
I do believe I've just seen a fellow and a wench retire together among the bushes.
Where?
Over there. I doubt not it is for some wicked purpose. And I doubt not something else.
Which is?
The fellow is Tom Jones.
The game's afoot. Get him!
I was right.
What the... What's happening?
And who is that wicked slut with you?
If I have any wicked slut with me, that's no business of yours.
I tell you plainly, I am resolved to discover who the trollop is.
And I am resolved you shan't. Don't come a step nearer.
Let me pass.
Let go of the reverend gentleman. Show some respect.
Take that, you rogue.
If you are offended by violence, please don't try to imagine what now ensues. Tom could easily have overpowered Master Blifil, but Mr. Thwackum is a different matter. The church truly militant. All might have gone ill for our hero, but for...
Damn you! Are you not ashamed, fool? 2-1-1!
The sensitive should be warned that scenes of even greater violence now ensue. At the end of which the squire and Tom are triumphant. Mr. Thwackum is vanquished, and Mr. Blifil is unconscious.
Damn me, Tom. It looks like you've knocked Blifil out. Not a pretty sight for the eyes of ladies, eh? Eh, Sophie?
Sophia's here.
Yes, and my sister. She's visiting us. Worse luck.
Brother, you are a perfect savage. Is this the way you bring your daughter up? Why, she is pale from watching all this bloodshed.
You exaggerate, Aunt. All the same, somebody should see to Mr. Blifil.
Yes, of course. Blifil? Blifil?
Oh, where am I? And where is the sinful woman?
What is he talking about?
I don't know.
Oh, yes, you do. I believe the cause of all this is not far off. If you beat the bushes, we should find her.
Oh, so you've been fighting for a wench, have you? I might have guessed there'd be a woman in the case with a randy fella like you, Tom.
Brother, please.
Mr. Jones, what have you to say for yourself?
He cannot deny it.
So where is the wench? Brother Tom, come on, show me. Come on, puss, puss, puss. Come out now, show yourself. I'll flush her out like we do a fox. Puss, puss, puss. I do believe she's already stole away. So, Tom, was she pretty? Do I know her?
Father, I wish to go home.
I'll take you at once, my dear. Really, brother, I have only been here a few hours and already I am mired in bucolic barbarity.
Sophia.
There's nothing to say. Take me home, Aunt.
I'm sorry.
It's a little late for apologies. Perhaps you should try them on Mr. Blifil, who has received a bloody nose from you. Come, Sophia. Brother, come.
My sister is a terrible woman, full of town learning and obstinate as a mule. Don't know where she gets it from.
I am sorry for your bloody nose, Blifil.
And I am sorry for you, Thomas. This incident must surely teach you a terrible lesson about the dangers of drunkenness.
And unbridled lust.
For once, I fear you are both right.
Miss Weston is a perfect mistress of manners, customs, ceremonies, and fashions. She is also well skilled in the doctrine of amour, a knowledge more easily obtained because she has never been diverted by any affairs of her own. Observing Sophia's melancholy over the next few days, she comes to her own conclusions.
Brother!
What now?
Have you not observed something very extraordinary in my niece lately?
No. Is anything the matter?
Brother, I know the world, and I am certain that my niece is most desperately in love.
In love? Without acquainting me? But I'll disinherit her. I'll turn her out of doors stark naked without a farthing.
Listen, please. Suppose she should have chosen the very person you would choose for her.
Well, if she marries the man I would have her marry, she may love whom she pleases. I shan't trouble my head about that.
Spoken like a sensible man, and heaven knows how rare it is for your sex to be sensible. So, good politics, sir. What think you of Mr. Blifil?
Blifil?
Did you not see her when he lay breathless on the ground? She was clearly distressed by the sight. Pray, what else could be the occasion of her melancholy that night at supper, the next morning, and indeed ever since?
Damn me! I do believe you're right. I knew Sophie was a good girl and would not fall in love to make me angry. Nothing can lie so handy together as our two estates, and the joining of them is my greatest desire. So, sister, what would you advise me to do? For you women know these matters better than we do.
Well, I am obliged to you for allowing us a capacity in anything. Now, my advice is that you go and propose the match to Mr. Allworthy yourself, now he is recovered. There is no indecorum in the proposal coming from the parents of either side. Just so long as you do not mention that your daughter is in love, that would indeed be against all the rules.
I will propose it then, but I'll lend him a flick if he refuses me.
The marriage is far too advantageous to be refused.
You never know with Allworthy.
Squire Weston is never a man for delays, so he gallops off, and in no time at all, the deed is done.
Nephew, I have just received from Squire Weston a proposal which I hope will be as gratifying to you as it is to me.
I obey you in everything.
Then I am delighted to tell you that he wishes to marry his daughter Sophia to you. Well, what do you think?
Sir, matrimony is not yet a subject upon which I have thought. But I am so sensible of your friendly and fatherly care that I will in all things submit myself to your pleasure.
My pleasure? Well, this is a cold answer, nephew, when you're offered the hand of a girl as beautiful and spirited as Sophia Weston. I don't understand how you could be impregnable to the force of such charms. Well, unless, of course, you have a prior engagement.
Oh, no, my heart is free. It's just that I believe that mutual respect is the basis of a true marriage between virtuous minds, not simply physical infatuation.
Well, there is something in that. So, you have no objection if I write to Mr. Weston and tell him that you have gladly received his proposal?
Of course. You may even add that I am deeply excited by the prospect.
Mr. Blifil does not add that the prospect that principally excites him is the very full enjoyment not of Miss Weston's person, but her fortune.
Sophia, I have news which will delight your very soul. Confide in me, and I undertake to make you happy to the very extent of your wishes.
I don't know what to say.
Now, no dishonesty. Consider you are only revealing to me what I know already. And rest assured it is a passion of which I highly approve.
Is that really possible?
Indeed. And this very afternoon your father has appointed for you to receive your lover.
This afternoon? Dear aunt, you frighten me out of my senses.
Oh, my dear, you will soon come to your senses again, for he is a charming young man.
Indeed. He has his faults, and sometimes he has upset me. And yet he is so brave, so gentle, so handsome. What signifies his being base-born with qualities like these?
Base-born? What do you mean, Mr. Blifil, base-born?
Mr. Blifil?
Mr. Blifil? Aye, Mr. Blifil. Of whom else have we been talking? Oh,
good heavens, I thought of Mr. Jones. I know of no other who deserves...
You horrify me. Is it Mr. Jones and not Mr. Blifil who is the object of your affection?
Mr. Blifil? You cannot be in earnest.
And is it possible you can think of disgracing your family by allying yourself to a bastard? Can the blood of the Weston submit to such contamination?
Madam, what I have said you have extorted from me. Whatever thoughts I have of that poor unhappy young man, I intended to carry them to my grave.
And I would rather follow you to the grave than I would see you disgrace yourself and your family by such a match. A family so noted for the prudence of its women. My brother shall know immediately.
No, please, aunt. You know the violence of his temper, and whatever my inclinations, I swear I would never do anything which might offend him.
No. Very well. But I will keep this secret from my brother on one consideration only.
Which is?
You promise to entertain Mr. Blifil this very afternoon as your lover, and to regard him as the person who is to be your husband.
I will see him. And be as civil to him as possible.
Mr. Blifil soon arrives, and the young couple are left alone. A long silence of nearly a quarter of an hour ensues. Mr. Blifil, from his inexperience in the ways of women, and from his conceit, takes this behaviour for a modest assent to his courtship.
Madam, you have made me the happiest of men.
Sir, you have made me... Will you excuse me?
Oh, so modest, so bashful, so rich.
How goes the wooing?
Swimmingly, sir, just as we could have wished.
Sophie, my best girl, choose whatever clothes you please, whatever jewels you please. Everything I have is yours. I only want to make you happy.
Do you really mean that, Father?
Haven't I said it?
Then please do not make me the most miserable creature on earth by forcing me to marry a man I detest.
What?
I cannot live with Mr. Blifil. To force me into this marriage would be killing me.
You can't live with Mr. Blifil.
Upon my soul, I can't.
Then die and be damned.
Father, please.
Kill you? Will marriage kill you? If you detest him never so much, you shall have him.
I cannot.
No, listen here. I am resolved upon this match. And unless you consent, I will not give you a groat. Not a single farthing. No, though I saw you expiring with famine in the street, I would not relieve you with a morsel of bread.
Unfortunately, Tom, ignorant of all that was being planned, chooses this moment to pay a visit.
Damnation on all fathers who have daughters, and damnation upon all daughters.
Mr. Weston?
She refuses, Blifil.
She...
Don't stand startled, Squire Allworthy and I have agreed the match.
Blifil? Yes. Sophia?
Yes, of course, and why not, I'd like to know.
But where is your daughter?
Upstairs, though she may be in hell for all I care.
Shall I go to her? Perhaps I can change her inclinations.
You're welcome to try.
Sophia, speak to me.
Tom, how are you here?
Your father thinks I'll plead my rifle's cause. Just now I'd use any means to gain access to you, because only this cruel occasion could ever have conquered the respect and awe you inspire in me to tell you I love you.
What do you expect me to say?
Promise that you will never give yourself to Blifil.
Rest assured that I will never give him what it is in my power to withhold.
Then may I hope?
Alas, hope for what? My father is determined, and you know he would never allow a match between us, however fond he is of you.
Think of the misery which I am to suffer if I am to lose you.
But think also of the ruin which I must bring upon you if I comply with your desire. Please, fly from me forever and avoid your own destruction.
I fear no destruction, except your loss. Sophia, I can never part from you. I can never...
What do I see? Strumpet? Hussy?
Oh, brother, some decorum, please.
Bugger decorum, Sophia, to your room.
Father, I...
Mr. Weston...
As for you, you lying, deceiving, bastardly brat, how dare you love my daughter? I will have satisfaction of you, so doff your clothes.
Oh, brother, this is too much.
Listen, you interfering old witch, if it's too much, why tell me she loves Jones in the first place? Come on, sir, defend yourself.
Sir, I will not...
Kiss my ass, then, you coward.
Sir, nothing you can say will provoke me to lift my hand against the father of Sophia.
You pisspot rogue.
No need to threaten me more, sir. I'm leaving.
Tom!
Goodbye, Sophia.
Goodbye, Tom.
Sister, lock the wench up.
Lock her up? She has done wrong, but surely...
Lock her up, I say, and I'll tell Mr. Allworthy he shall know of this. Saddle my horse!
Tom knows better than to hurry home. His fate is being decided, and it is not in his power to change it.
Well, there you have it, Mr. Allworthy. The rogue would have debauched her upon the spot. But do not be discouraged, Mr. Blifil. She shall marry you in spite of her teeth.
Thank you, sir, but...
And now I must be off home to see if the girl has come to her senses. If not, it's incarceration in her room for her. Good day to you.
This is sad news, nephew.
Indeed. Reason dictates me to quit all thoughts of a woman who places her affections on another. But my passion bids me hope that she may in due course change her inclinations in my favour.
You may have to wait rather a long time.
Perhaps. But more importantly, I fear for her if her affections are indeed drawn towards Thomas. She will not only marry a beggar, but the little fortune her father cannot withhold from her will be squandered on the wench with whom I know he yet converses.
Molly, you mean?
But that is but a trifle, for I know him to be one of the worst men in the world.
Well, strong words. What's he done now?
No, I hardly like...
You tell me.
On the very day when your life was in danger, he filled the house with riot and debauchery. He drank and sang and roared, and when I tried to rebuke him, he fell into a violent passion, swore many oaths, and struck me.
But how could he?
I'm afraid there's more. That very evening, as Mr. Thwackum and I were taking the air, we unluckily saw him engaged with a wench in a manner not fit to be mentioned.
On the very same evening?
I fear so. And when Mr. Thwackum advanced to rebuke him, he fell upon the worthy man and beat him outrageously. I, too, was assaulted for attempting to intervene. I have forgiven him, of course, and promised myself never to tell you of this because I knew it would be fatal to him. But if you disbelieve me, ask Mr. Thwackum.
Oh, I don't know what to say.
Sir?
Come in, Mr. Jones. Pray, do not skulk.
I believe Squire Weston
Tom, you have grieved me to the heart. I have forgiven you again and again in compassion for your youth and hope of your amendment. Now I have finally found that you are an abandoned reprobate, and such as it would be criminal to support and encourage.
I acknowledge I have often failed you, but my heart...
It pains me, but I see no choice but to banish you from my sight forever.
Sir, please.
Now I will give you enough money to enable you, with industry, to get an honest livelihood. But tomorrow you must leave...
Tomorrow? Will you allow me no time
tomorrow.
To...
Tomorrow?
Goodbye, Mr. Jones.
A heroine shut up in her room by her angry parent. A hero banished from the home in which he has spent his entire life with barely a pittance in his hand. I hope you will agree that your storyteller knows how to end an episode.
In part one of Tom Jones, dramatised by Stephen Wyatt, Tom was played by Michael Legg, Henry Fielding by Simon Russell Beale, Mr. Allworthy by James Lawrenson, Squire Weston by Trevor Peacock, Blifil by Adrian Scarborough, and Black George by Sam Dale. Sophia was played by Claire Corbett, Miss Weston by Margaret Tysack, Jenny Jones by Rachel Bavage, Partridge by Charles Barnicutt, Mrs. Seagrim by Liza Sadovy, and Honour by Jasmine Callan. The director was Claire Grove.
So where will Tom's adventures lead him next? The story continues in our drama hour here on 4 Extra at the same time tomorrow. Now, this weekend, we here on BBC Radio 4 Extra will be celebrating the radio career of the late comedy producer Geoffrey Perkins. Angus Deaton pays tribute to his friend and colleague with a selection of Perkins-produced comedies from the BBC archive, including Radioactive, the first national, local radio station.
And a great good morning. Hi, Mike Flix here. Look after yourselves and thanks for the money. My name is Mike Flix.
Mike Flix.
Yep, Mike Flix. And by one of those happy coincidences, this is the Mike Flix Show. And thank you for all those of you who wrote in for the Find a New Name for Mike Flix competition. We still haven't picked the winner, but thank you to Joy for suggesting Old Dustbin Head. We'll have a brand new competition later on when we'll be inviting you to find a name for the microphone. So, plenty of fun there, I would think. Well, you're listening to...
Radioactive!
Britain's first national local radio station. Broadcasting to you on the same wavelength as all the local taxis.
Geoffrey Perkins as Mike Flex in Radioactive, part of the workings of Perkins. Saturday morning at 9 and again in the evening at 7 here on BBC Radio 4 Extra. Now, here's what's coming up on our sister station.
The lights are low, we've got cheap red wine and a studio heaving with opinion. So what could possibly go wrong over the next 57 minutes or so?
Each Friday evening, BBC Radio 4 is unbuttoning.
What do we know about who's doing what, with whom, to whom, and how often?